a chronometer to make sure that I'm staying within 30 minutes. I'd like to thank the organizers for having me today. It's a real pleasure. I understand that the conference is about methodological aspects, so no worries. My talk will not be technical or technological at any rate. I will talk about technology, but the core aspect of what I'm going to say is methodological. To confront, to face, to compare different methods, because I do not conceive the digital humanities as the application of tools, so as a technical aspect to what we already do, but as an application of methods, digital methods to what we do. So the core conception is that the way we do things in the digital media, with the same aims that we always have, but the way we do things is different. And the reason why we do them in a digital medium is because we can do different things and things that we couldn't do before. So the title of my talk is A Digital Critical Edition Model, that's a keyword for Prishan. It refers to a project for a new digital, for a new critical edition of Prishan's Ars Grammatica, led by Professor Michela Rosellini from La Sapienza, who's here with us, with the crucial help of Dr. Spangenberg-Janes, who's also here today. I have been involved in this project from the digital humanities point of view. I have been entrusted to devise the digital humanities aspects. And I'm participating in the construction of the project because we don't want this project to be a traditional print edition with an online version. But we want to conceive it with new methods. So I will first give a short introduction to TEI for those of you who don't know this. This is the digital standard today for encoding literary text, cultural heritage text. And then talk about three key aspects of Prishan's Ars Grammatica, that you all know, obviously, but I will just cover them shortly. The presence of glossa in the tradition of manuscript traditions. The presence of Greek text and its tradition in medieval scribes, medieval scriptoria, and the presence of literary quotations, and we'll try to see if the digital philology methods can give us a help to model these three aspects in a way that print editions couldn't do. So what's TEI? TEI is an encoding, is a way to model literary text in a way that the computer understands. And Professor Orlandi, who's here, is my maestro and teacher in digital humanities, once told me the only one reason why we are doing things digitally, we're encoding text, is for the computer to process them. Not to be visualized, because print is great for that, but for the computer to process them and do something with those texts. So if I say, this is a famous poem, a short poem by Ungaretti, Mattina, the title is Mattina, two verses, mi illumino di mezzo, morning, I enlighten myself of immensity. This is a plain text file, it's an XML file, in which we have used special characters that we call markup, to say that this is a head, this is a line, and this is another line. It's very ugly to watch, it's very ugly to see, but the computer can understand this, and we can create an algorithm, a software, that can, for example, perform searches on the verses, excluding the titles, or make statistics, etc., etc. The key point is that we have elements. This is an element line with a start tag and an end tag with a slash. This is the element name. L is for line. Okay, who decided that L is for line? L and not LI. There has been a consortium. It's called the Text Encoding Initiative Consortium that has decided the shared vocabulary. That's it. There's no ontological or special meaning. However, if we all use this protocol, we can create software that can process this easily because the software knows that the software is looking for letter L and not for letter LI, letters LI. And also, a project can create encode text in this way, and another project can import those texts because they are in the same vocabulary. Just to clear up some assumptions, such as this is the right way to do things, this is the only way to do things, etc. So we have the element name, L, we have the attribute number, and we have the value of the attribute. So this is line number 2. All right, what happens when we have variants? So we're going to create a critical edition. So we want to encode the variants in tens and tens of manuscripts. Variance meaning that, let's imagine manuscript A that has mattina, feminine, and manuscript B that has mattino, masculine, in this case. This is one of the possible ways to do this in TEI, the one that we chose for the project, which is the critical apparatus modules. We create one big file with the text of Priscian's Ars Grammatica, and we create an element app, apparatus criticus, in the point at which the text has a variant. And we have an element lemma, which is the reading that we accept, with an attribute wit, which is for witness. So witness A has reading mattina, and this is the lemma, so the one that we accept. And then we have another element, RDG reading. Witnesses B and C have text mattino. In this way, the computer can memorize the information, the data, and then visualization comes afterwards. We don't care about visualization right now. Visualization is only one way to process the text. But the computer can do more than just visualizing or creating digital dynamic apparatuses. The computer, for example, can perform statistics, what kind of readings some branches of the tradition has, etc., etc. Okay, so let's go to humanistic stuff. Priscian's Ars Grammatica, Priscianus Caesariensis flourished around 500 AD, and he lived in Constantinople, in a place in which people spoke Greek. That's the key point. The Ars Grammatica is a long, long text, a Latin grammar text, but as we all know, the standard in the Middle Ages. As a consequence, it's full of glossae. This is an example of a glossa everywhere. It's meant for Greek speakers, which means that it has a lot of Greek text. For instance, this very page of the manuscript, thanks Elena for pointing me to this image online, there are two Greek portions of the text, ennoian and apotuboo. There are two kinds of Greek text in Priscian. Simple expressions like this, ut dux educendo, well, apotuboo. Just like dux comes from ducendo, like in Greek. Why does he need to explain this in Greek? I know Greek and Latin too, but I'm a Latinist by training, so you would rather explain the Greek with the Latin. But that's the other way around here, because the intended audience originally was Greek. And there are also literary quotations. Just like also Homer says, hos phasanhe pleithous, so spoke the crowd. So these three key aspects, glossae, Greek text, and literary quotations, are the three aspects that we are trying to model in our edition, in addition to other things, but these are the three main things. Let's see if the digital humanities help us. Glossae, Greek text, literary quotations. Oh, by the way, those three aspects, each one of them is a bridge. Priscian text is a bridge between different cultures, and that's why it's so important. Not per se, but in its tradition. Glossae are a bridge between Priscian and the Middle Ages. Greek text was a bridge between the Greek world in which he lived and Latin, and brought Greek text in the medieval scriptorium. And literary quotations are obviously a bridge between the classical world and us, also because Priscian often quotes lost text. Okay, let's talk about glossae first. So, some glossae are medieval, obviously, some others are Priscian's own. So they're particularly important from a cultural point of view from two respects. Some because they're classical, some because they're medieval. One key aspect of the transmission of glossae, which is very interesting to me, is something that print technology falls short at representing. A glossae is always, or almost always, a glossa to a specific manuscript text. Let's imagine an imaginary situation. You mention mattina and says, imagine, poetic feminine. Manuscript B has another glossa, poetic masculine, that comments on mattino. So each gloss lives in the manuscript and comments one manuscript. Now what we do with classicists, with dirty classicists? We publish Euripides text in one edition and Euripides scholia in another book. Because the print technology has limitations. We cannot publish the reality, which is that glossae are a text or a meta text that lives in the manuscript together with that text. That's too complex. It takes too much space to represent in print. But the digital medium doesn't have the space constraints. So we need a manuscript, we want to have a manuscript centered model in the digital edition that returns the models, that creates a digital model for this complex relationship. By the way, this is nostalgic for me because that was the first paper I published in Digital Humanities in 2006 about the relationship between glossa and text. Okay, so imagine the simple situation. Millumino, there are no variants, okay? So manuscript A, this is TI encoding. Manuscript A had source A has a note with target L1. That's in manuscript A that says metaphor. Manuscript B has another note, so source is manuscript B, target is L1, source B, elision of me. So we are now representing the relationship between the glossa and the manuscript. Each glossa belongs to one manuscript, and the relationship between glossa and text in a way that print wouldn't allow us to do. But the more complex situation is when we have variants, the case I said before. In this case, we can encode this way. Manuscript A has a note with target R1. This is the key point. I'm not referring to the paragraph, to the line. I'm referring to the reading. Target R1, ID R1. So this note is a note in manuscript A, referring to reading 1. This is a note to this reading. So now I'm encoding the relationship between that specific note in the manuscript and the text in the manuscript. Whereas manuscript B has poetic masculine, which is a note of manuscript B, to reading 2. Poetic masculine mattino. So there is a technological solution. Technology comes afterwards. I could have given you the same slide without the TI rubbish. Because TI comes afterwards, it could be a database. What's important is not the technology, but the model. And the modeling is not an engineering work. It's work for humanists. And this is exactly what I intend, what I mean by digital humanities. Modeling humanistic objects. And then the programmers will come, and we can do exactly the same exact thing with the database, with the plain text, with hypertext, etc. The second point is the presence of Greek text in Latin Europe. So first, what's the issue? We have simple expressions or literary quotations in Greek, but this thing goes into Latin scriptoria. So this is the Latin. This is Vincent from Beauvais. So the poor scribe has Greek in front of him, and he says, "What?" Because probably he doesn't know any Greek. What does he do? One thing that Professor Rossellini found out recently, it's a very interesting discovery in Christian's philology, is that there is hardly any contamination in the Greek portions of the text of the Ars Grammatica. We all know what contamination is, right? I mean, when the scribe had a manuscript of Proscianus and another manuscript of Proscianus, and he probably had more than one because it was that textbook, and he copied one manuscript, but then he corrected the Latin with the other manuscript, and that's contamination between a branch and the other. Good for the text, but bad for the philologist. However, when he finds Greek, he says he cannot do contamination. He cannot compare and correct just because he doesn't know Greek. In order to choose whether the right reading is the one of manuscript A or manuscript B, I have to know Greek, which one is better. So what happens is Professor Rossellini found that the scribes simply copy Greek directly from the main source, main apographus. So that's good for the stemma codicum, the reconstruction of the stemma codicum. This means that we want to get the encoding of Greek straight. We want to get the Greek right from the manuscripts. What happens later is that normally they omit, later scribes omit the Greek altogether. And humanistic editors, manuscript or editions, guess the Greek or correct or recreate the Greek based on their knowledge, which is interesting because it gives us a cultural map of the knowledge of Greek throughout centuries and throughout countries, throughout different scriptoria, in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. So this is their work. So this is the humanistic side of it. How do we model this in the digital, in a digital edition? Okay. So we were discussing just before about a choice, a dilemma that you have in regular editions. Do you regularize the spelling, or do you report the spelling of the manuscript, which is particularly important in early modern Italian, German, because the spelling changes so much. Also in Latin. We all know that Latin is not the standard language. Well, we know this better than anybody else. They have to explain this to other scholars, because one thinks, well, Latin is Latin. You write Latin the normal way. Well, no, not at all. Not obviously for you, but believe me. I go to a number of different conferences. This is your humanist. I travel through different disciplines. So now, let's imagine that the scribe wrote this with Latin characters. In a normal edition, we would probably normalize the text. And also in the apparatus, we often normalize the text. The point is that we have to choose. Either we give the regularized transcription or the original paragraphic transcription. In the digital, you don't have to choose. Now, since Greek portions of the text are so important for the stemma codicum, we are choosing to encode Greek portions of the text on two different layers. So in this case, you would encode in TI with these elements, reg and the regularized and the original transcription. How do you visualize this? This is none of our business so far. We'll decide this when we create the website. The website is really a programmer's job. It's very easy to put a button in the website that says, show original, show diplomatic, right? It's not a problem. But we can process those separately. When we use digital computational linguistic tools or we perform searches, we are interested in how you write it normally, in a regularized spelling. When, however, we are doing philological work, we are interested in these stupid errors such as eta, eta, etc., because they give us an idea of the relationship between manuscripts. Okay, so, and here comes the most complex thing. As we are encoding original spelling, we are also encoding paleographic variants, orthographic variants, non-significant variants, which are non-significant for the meaning, but are significant for the stemma codicum. So, in this case, I know this looks very scary. Let's break this down. Reading, so apparatus, lemma, prolepsy. Reading group type substantial, and we're encoding we're separating and encoding substantial readings. A substantial reading is one in which the case changes, the meaning changes. More formally, I define a substantial reading one in which the regularized spelling is different. The regularized spelling is different. This is nominative, this is accusative, the meaning changes. However, we can also encode a number of paleographic or orthographic variants in which witness G, for example, has the same thing, which is the accusative singular of prolepsis prolepsios. So it means the same thing, but the way he writes it down is different. Not only he writes it with Latin letters, but he writes an I instead of an eta, which can give us a hint to the scriptorium, to the relationship with other manuscripts, etc. So the regularized spelling is the same, but the original spelling is different, and that's a paleographic variant to me. Literary quotations, and I'm almost finished. Literary quotations are a more simple issue, in a way. Priscian says, just like also Homer says, hos phasan he pleithous, so spoke the crowd. This is the quotation that refers to Homer, Iliad 278. What we want now is to model, so to create a digital model of this relationship and of this citation. If I read Homer dot Iliad 2.278, I understand what it means intuitively. But we want to transform this into some sort of link. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about a link that refers to a page, but about a non-ambiguous reference to the 278th verse of the second book of a cultural object that we call Iliad. So, a protocol for also there are more complex relationships. Priscian quotes Caresius, who quotes Ennius, quote Spangler. She gave me this example. We want to model this citation in a formal way. Formal means only one thing: that you can build an algorithm that can process it. Why do we want to process this relationship? To create automatic indexes, to create a graph of the literary quotations, of the literary word into this book, what texts are quoted more often in one book or in the other, etc., etc. In other words, everything that's that can be automatized. So there's a protocol, it's called the Distributed Text Services, DTS. That's the evolution of a former protocol called CTS. That transforms this into this. So I would encode this in TI, saying, in this paragraph, Quomodo et Homerus, he's making a reference type source to this text. I know this looks scary, but at the end of the day, it's not scary at all. It's very understandable. TLG12 is the code for Homer, and Iliad is the code, has this code, and this is true. There are cultural issues behind this. Probably this is not the venue to discuss them, but I wrote an article against this protocol and against TI, but as we have to use something, we use this. Why? Because who says that Homer is one person and has code 12? Code 12 is just a convention, but who says that Homer is one person? And then, so DTS now doesn't talk about authors, but about work groups. So, right, so the Corpus Tibullianum, which is Pseudo-Tibullus, has a code. But who says that one poem of the poet of the Corpus Tibullianum does not belong to Tibullus? And when in 100 years we are certain for sure that this one text of Pseudo-Tibullus belongs to Tibullus, this code will not change. Otherwise our whole software will be broken. So people will continue to know that it's from Tibullus, but it has a wrong code. Are we sure that this will not have cultural consequences? You know what I'm saying? So for instance, languages. Languages have codes in the digital world. There's a code for Italian, IT. In the future, Italy splits into two countries. We still have one code, you know what I'm saying? Or Italy is unified with, I don't know, Spain. We still have one code. Code influences culture, and culture influences code. But this is another issue. Anyway, we're using this. My conclusions are just a summary, a recapitulation. I have discussed with you three key cultural issues of cultural significance or philological significance in Christian glossa, Greek text, digital quotations. We have found models, digital models, that allow us to do with a digital edition something we could not do in print. We try to do something better, but we mostly try to do things that we could not do before. For the glossa, we are elaborating a manuscript-centered model that models the relationship of the glossa with the manuscript and of the glossa with the specific text of that manuscript. For Greek text, we are encoding Greek on a multi-layered transcription which kills the distinction between interpretive and diplomatic editions. And for literary quotations, we are automatizing modeling those relationships between Christian and Homer through the use of a specific protocol. Thank you very much for your attention. I'm looking forward to your feedback.